Falling out of the sky. Paris, Frankfurt, Geneva, Helsinki, Rome. Other people knew cities by their fine monuments, parks or palaces. Miller knew them by the shape of their sprawl. A dog chasing its tail. A ship capsized. A hunchback curled in a heap. At night, the patterns of lights would rise to greet him like old friends, like gemstones glittering in a necklace or the rings winking on Anna's fingers. Since the accident, the incident as the Italians would say, he'd kept thinking of Anna. Flying low over Rome, he imagined her sunbathing naked on her terrace, looking up at the shadow he'd traced across her square of blue sky. On arrival at Leonardo da Vinci, a few hours to Fritter, he'd made an impulsive phone call. She'd recognised his voice immediately. "My God, Miller!" And the thrill of it had taken him back to their fierce encounters in late-night drinking clubs, hotel bedrooms, steamy cafes around the world. Nowadays, he shared bland, functional lodgings with his co-pilots, emptying the minibar, flicking through satellite TV channels, keeping an eye out for other card players. No language barriers and a hand of poker. "Would it be okay," he asked, "if I come by?" "Sure, I never go anywhere these days." "I didn't know if you'd still be around." "Alone," he meant. "Just me and my brood," adding with her throaty laugh. "I've turned into Catwoman, darling." They used to be all over the place, he remembered from his earlier visits to the city. Hordes of cats. Black, white, ginger, tortoiseshell tabby, battle-scarred scavengers stalking the ruins of the Forum, basking on a warm patch of mosaic, sheltering under a fallen Ionic column, giving birth on a pile of aromatic bay leaves. They'd gone now. Outside the apartment block, Miller hesitated. He hadn't seen her for years. Even now, he wasn't quite ready to acknowledge the string of circumstances that brought him to her door. "An old girlfriend," he'd told the rest of the crew casually. "Used to be a model. Retired, young and wealthy. Always a free spirit." Back in those days, flying had made him feel like God. How could it have diminished to a job as dull and familiar as an old pair of shoes? Until recently, that is. A bundle of rags, propped against the peeling stucco of the building, not far from his feet, shifted, extended a hand. Miller, dismissing the image of that other bundle, the broken bag of bones for which he felt responsible, quickly rang Anna's bell. Logic told him that, of course, he wasn't a murderer. But it couldn't stop him feeling like one. There was no lift to her top-floor apartment. Miller was breathing heavily by the time he reached the final flight of stairs. She was waiting for him in the doorway with the light behind her, so he couldn't see the lines on her face or the silver threading her hair. But the sinuous shape blocking the entrance, one hand on her hips, a cigarette drooping from the other, was as powerfully erotic as ever. He had planned to embrace her, but she moved swiftly back through the corridor, leading him onto her terrace. "Of course I'm pleased to see you," she said, "but I think you should know I've given up men." The terrace, wrapped around her tiny apartment, was a jungle of vines and bougainvillea. Tall, rustling forests of bamboo prowled by miniature tigers. Anna pushed back a swathe of foliage. "See," she threw at him over her shoulder, "your world may be shrinking, but mine's still growing." The sharp, impatient blare of Roman traffic from the street below was overlaid with a soft hum that reminded him of the throb of a 747 at cruising speed. He identified the tumbling, mumbling chorus as cats purring. They wrapped their quivering tails around Anna's brown legs and growled at Miller's trousers. She shooed a tabby off a table, picked up a carafe of wine and poured him a glass. He shook his head. "No, thanks, I don't anymore." She looked briefly surprised. Possibly she was recalling the long, brandy-fueled nights when they had been lovers. "Had a bit of liver damage from a bout of hepatitis. No need to go into details. He'd got over it. Gave up the drink a few years ago." "And I've chosen celibacy. What a pair we are. Tell me, have you given up anything else?" Wasn't that what he'd always liked about Anna? Her ability to cut to the quick, to ask the questions others had either not thought of or perhaps not dared to voice. He sat on a spindly wrought iron chair, felt it wobble beneath him. "That's why I wanted to see you. This is probably going to be my last trip here. I'm quitting." They'd never actually said goodbye. They'd simply drifted apart when he'd been taken off the European routes for a while. This was his chance to tie up the loose ends. He thought she'd probably understand. After all, she'd abandoned a successful career herself, had reduced her globe-trotting to a mass of potted plants that needed watering every night, and a flock of creatures that needed feeding every day. No wonder she couldn't leave home. Anna no longer plucked her eyebrows into fine, supercilious arcs. She brought them together in a frown. "Why?" she asked. "Athens, Istanbul, Madrid, Naples, Nice, New York. A carousel of cities to pick and mix. Why on earth," Miller wondered, "did people always want to talk to him about their holiday experiences?" Standing at the edge of a Christmas drinks party, gazing through the window at an overcast sky, accosted by a woman with thick makeup and thicker ankles, determined to pass on the hell of being stuck in the lift in one of the towers of La Sagrada Familia. "Midsummer, you've no idea of the smells. Mind you, when we finally did get to the top, it was worth it. The views of Barcelona are quite incredible." "He probably knows that," said her husband over her shoulder. "Of course," she giggled and gave Miller a playful poke in the ribs. "Go on, say it for us now."
"What?"
"This is your captain speaking." Miller guffawed along with her husband as if at a tremendous joke. "We travel abroad at least 6 times a year, you know. We've been everywhere. I suppose you could say we pay your wages." "Can't we duck out next time?" Miller pleaded with his wife, Diane. "I don't think showing your face once in a while is so much to ask." In fact, Diane had long ago created a social life in which he played very little part. Quite often, when he was home on leave, he found himself more of a hindrance than an asset to his family. An obstacle they fell over in the house because they'd forgotten he might be in the way. His teenage children had passed the stage where they were excited to have a father who flew aeroplanes. They knew he was little more than a taxi driver in gold braid. They'd already visited more exotic locations than they could count, and preferred to hang out at home with their friends. "It's not much of a perk these days, your cheap travel entitlement," said Diane, "when flights are being sold at a penny a seat. Would you rather I did something else?"
"Such as?"
"I could cash in the pension, start up a business." She shrugged as if it was scarcely anything to do with her. "It would be odd having you home all the time." Tel Aviv, Baghdad, Beirut, Kabul. He'd been on the Middle East run, shambolic, broken down cities, a different order of ruins. On the way out, the first officer had been at the controls. Miller was trying to ease himself into a training role. On the way back from Kabul, he agreed to take over the landing at Heathrow. A clear dawn, visibility good, radio control efficient, the descent almost as automatic as the drive home to Twickenham. A slight lurch of the stomach he welcomed as he would welcome any indication that he still had feelings. Circling in a wide arc above the sprawl of the M4 corridor, lowering the wheels and the wing panels, he heard the roar and rush of metal slicing through the air. Ahead of him the runway, the long belt of tarmac he met with scarcely a judder. The passion had gone, but he could still effect a smooth landing.
"Heading straight home?" asked the first officer.
"Yeah, probably. What day is it?"
"Thursday."
"Thursday, right.
Kids at school, he supposed, wife at work. Sometimes he lost track. No point in hurrying. He might as well have breakfast in the canteen. Black pudding, fried eggs, lots of tea to give him energy. She'd have saved up a list of household jobs, Diane. She didn't like to think of him sitting around with nothing to do. He wished he found sleep easier. He wished that a legacy of night flying and early calls didn't make it so hard for him to obliterate more than a few hours at a time. In the event, he remembered, he went home and dreamt of Anna. The police turned up a couple of days later on a Saturday afternoon. Diane pulled a brush through her hair and went to answer the door, her voice unusually high and querulous. Miller could hear them ask for him. "Just a few routine questions," they said, "nothing to worry about." But their panda car and its shrieking livery was parked in the driveway.
and Diane would have to explain its presence to the neighbours. Her face, on being shut out of the chilly dining room, was thunderous. The one who had flashed the badge of a detective inspector said to Miller, "We're investigating the death of a suspected asylum seeker." Miller urged them to sit at the table, wished he could have met them on neutral ground. "We think he might have stowed away on your plane." "Jesus, what, in the baggage hold?" "In the undercarriage, behind the wheel shaft." "But that's impossible. It's been done before." "What makes you think he was on my flight?" "We can't be certain, but he seems to have been an Afghani, and the time fits." Miller rubbed his forehead in a daze. "Where is he now?" The second policeman spoke. "A man walking his dog says he saw him fall. He landed in a field a few miles from here." "Dead, of course." A rattling in the corner caught their attention. Diane opened the hatch from the kitchen and poked through three cups of tea and a bowl of sugar. The doors of the hatch stayed open. The tea grew cold. "I don't suppose you noticed anything." Miller had to make an effort to keep his voice down. "For Christ's sake, what would I notice? A plane isn't like a car. You don't feel a thud when the dog runs into your bumper or a suitcase flies off the roof." "No, well, we're having the security cameras at Kabul Airport checked, but there's not much else we can do." "Pretty useless sort of hijacking," observed Miller. All he could see of Diane was a strip of pink sweater bulging around her waist. "Wasn't a hijack, mate, just some damn fool of a refugee thought he could cheat gravity." The body, they told Miller, had fallen, frozen from the sky. As soon as it hit the ground, it shattered. The Afghani had wrapped himself in layers of jackets, trousers and blankets, enough to survive the coldest temperatures he might have experienced so far in the ice-covered mountains of his homeland. At 30,000 feet, he had no hope of survival. "You'd have thought the poor sods would have got the message by now," said the detective inspector. Diane was ironing. The scent of clean, freshly pressed laundry hovered at the edge of the room. Miller thought, how desperate must a man be? Sitting in the sun on Anna's terrace while she brewed him an espresso, a distant view of the Colosseum, of a world lost 2,000 years ago. A swift movement made him turn his head, a lizard helpless in the jaws of an elegant tortoiseshell. As he watched, the lizard's tail dropped to the ground, writhed once or twice. The cat bounded away with her prey. Anna handed him a tiny brimming cup. "Is this how you like it?" Distracted, remote, treating him like a stranger. She'd changed too. Her breasts sagged beneath her t-shirt. Her fingers were bare. She'd pawned her rings, she said, for vet's bills. Couldn't be bothered to redeem them. Miller nodded. He'd paid for at least two of those rings. He could still picture the jeweller in Amsterdam, eye grotesquely distorted through his lens, spreading out diamonds for Anna to choose. Diane preferred more practical gifts. Their home was stuffed with Murano glasses and Spanish paella dishes. The strong coffee scalded his throat. "I knew nothing about the guy who fell. No idea he was there. Why should I feel guilty?" "I tell you, Italy is full of Albanians coming over any way they can, swimming even. I think there's one begging outside your portone." "Chi se ne frega, no one gives a fuck." "Do you miss it?" he said suddenly. Sex, work, travel, what was he really asking? Anna tipped her face towards the sky, closed her eyes and spoke to the light froth of cloud. "I had a baby who died," she said. "Oh God, I'm sorry." Miller's children were robust, disrespectful, increasingly independent. "It was a while ago now, and it wasn't yours, if that's what you're thinking." Her voice was smooth as chocolate, but her hands were balled into fists. A cat needed a hollow in her lap. "Death makes you re-examine your life, wouldn't you say?" "I don't know. I don't know anything anymore." Anna straightened her fingers, tapped a cigarette from the pack, but didn't light it. "I'm sorry, Miller, I can't help you." He sighed, reached out, and pulled her into his arms. He needed to hold her very tight one last time, to counter the thrust of her hips with his own, to stroke her long swan's neck. He'd even bear one of her ferocious temper tantrums if it meant he could feel something again. Anna stood passively in his grasp. There was no spark, nothing like the connection that had fired them in the old days. He kissed her cheek.
"It's been good to see you," he said. "Don't pretend you're going to keep in touch.
I've already said this is my last trip." The fragrance of jasmine, the dance of sunlight on her skin as she broke free. His balls ached. Was that a good sign?
"Goodbye, Miller," said Anna.
He climbed slowly to the bottom of the building. The stairwell seemed particularly dark after the brightness of the terrace. Cobwebs massed in the corners of the old wooden ceiling. Spiders dangled perilously. He stepped outside the main door into the street. Overhead soared a flash of silver jet. Incredible, he thought, how empty the skies seemed from below, like the world from above. A cough and a shuffle made him look down. The Albanian was still crouched against the wall. Miller dug into his pockets, pulled out a fistful of euros he wasn't going to need anymore, and stuffed them recklessly into the man's hands.